The 40 for 80 podcast is presented by Georgia Farm Bureau, always the home team. Now, here's your host, Jeff Dantzler.
Hello and welcome to 40 for 80, the sweetest season. Episode 3 in our chronicles of Georgia's magical 12-0 run to the 1980 National Championship. Today, we revisit the Bulldogs' thrilling 20-16 victory over Clemson between the hedges. Our very special guest, two of the greatest and most decorated players in Georgia football history, record-setting All-American place kicker from Marietta, Georgia, number 5, Rex Robinson, and from Jonesboro, record-setting All-American, number 19, Scott Werner. I'm your host, Jeff Dantzler, and Rex, we'll start with you. We're coming into this Clemson game at 2-0. It's an overcast, muggy day. We had won a tight win against Tennessee. We had really given it to Texas A&M, blew them out 42-0. What's the feeling with the team? What do you remember going into this Saturday afternoon game, the old 1:30 kickoff against our old rival Clemson?
Well, I tell you, I still don't know that we understood the potential that we had. And the Clemson rivalry back then was very much back and forth. It was always a competitive game. And turned out they were really, really good. You know, it was the year before they actually won the national championship. So I had forgotten until fairly recently that I was actually a captain in that game. That didn't happen very often. The teams that we were the most competitive with, and back in those days, it was South Carolina, Clemson, Auburn. That's where a lot of my personal, and it's kind of a strong word, but hatred came from. With those teams that actually beat us, and of course that wasn't Georgia Tech and that wasn't Florida back in those days. So, you know, those were down the list of most hated, but Clemson ranked up there for me personally. And so it meant a lot for me to actually be in a position to at least do my part and contribute to a victory.
Along the lines of the rivalry there, Scott, they had beaten us the year before, 2 years before that, and you guys were both a part of the great Wonder Dogs team of 78. We handed Clemson their only loss. So I know everybody knew the stakes were huge heading into this. We're sitting here at 2-0. Did you have that feeling that this team was something special yet?
I had no idea. I knew we were a bunch of mismatched quarterbacks playing in the secondary. It was rather comical when I looked around the secondary at all the guys that had played quarterback in high school, and now we're all playing corner and safety and linebacker and you name it. No, I had no idea. I remember from 78 being such a battle. One of my better games from 78 was covering Jerry Butler and Perry Tuttle all day. It turned out positive on the positive end, but Steve Fuller didn't make life easy. That's for dang sure. But if you look at Clemson, Georgia, for years there, and we're all recruiting the same athletes. That's, you know, you're going to go to Clemson, you're going to go to Georgia, and the same thing with Auburn. That heavy dislike for the opposing team came, you know, we all knew each other. We knew where folks were coming from.
Before we get into the specifics of the game, Rex, I want to go back to you. Two areas where we were just dominant in 1980, special teams and turnover margin. Rex, you were first-team All-American, one of the great kickers in college football history. Scott averaged over 15 yards per return. And what's amazing, we only gave up 8 total punt return yards all season, and we led the nation in turnover margin. Just those extra possessions, all of the quote-unquote hidden yardage there, those were the two biggest advantages I thought our team had in 1980.
Yes. In reflecting back on those days and the fact that, you know, I got so many opportunities. You know, Coach Dooley always seemed to put a premium on defense and special teams. And if the offense came along for the ride, then that was great. But you know, to have those kind of opportunities and to have that kind of trust was very special. And 1980 epitomized that philosophy. Obviously, Herschel helped in terms of the offensive side, but there were days like the Clemson game and also, heck, the national championship game where the defense and the special teams really helped us win. So, again, you know, all I could ever – my goal was always just to do my part, and 1980 was a good year.
Scott, to have Rex, one of the all-time greats, you were one of the all-time greats. Anytime we had an exchange of possession, whether it was with a turnover, a punt, whatever it may be, as we just mentioned there, that hidden yardage, those quote-unquote little things, they really do add up in the big games, and they certainly do in the culmination of a season.
Well, all I can say is Coach Russell, before every game, used to talk about the best way to win a game is not to lose it. And the best way not to lose it is not make mistakes. And I can't, you know, the only thing everybody wants when they go out on the football field is the ball. That's what everybody's chasing. Not the ball carrier, not the quarterback, the ball. And that 80 team had a knack. And they wanted the football, not the player, just they wanted the ball. And as it turned out, that was such a big factor in our winning strategy that we ended up with a football in all over the field, but it was still our ball. And if you're holding on to the football, you're not going to end up on the losing side.
Well, when I was a kid, I probably listened to the Larry Munson highlight tape from the 1980 National Championship about 17 million times, and I never will forget one of the things he said when we went up 14-0 at that point. Clemson had run 30 plays. We had run 5. But we're winning this thing because of Scott Werner. Well, Scott, you had so many great days at Georgia. I think this one was the best. Let's start with the punt return, a 67-yarder after we had actually stopped Clemson 3-and-out. By the way, in that game, more on this later, they had 6 drives that went at least 11 plays. And the defense just fought so hard throughout that whole game and let them in the end zone only once. But, Scott, at that point, that 67-yarder there, you got some great blocking from the get-go. Take us all the way through the punt return that gave us the 7-0 lead.
Well, Jeff, I had a pretty good idea that I was going to get a return ball. They're kicking out of their end zone, roughly the 10-yard line, somewhere in that area. And you always max protect when you're down there on that end of the field. So I knew I had a chance to catch the football and run. I heard the blocks going on around me when I'm waiting for the ball to come down. And that's another one of those. My theory on punt return was catch and go to the goal line. I bump into a couple of my guys, Bob and Dale Williams, Mike Fisher. I don't know who was throwing the blocks, but and I bump into them and I clear the blocking, and there's no one except the punter. And Rex and Kevin both know how I feel about kickers. And if you let the punter tackle you, you've relinquished your punt return skills completely to someone else. That's for sure.
Well, you have to turn in your man card.
There you go.
Now, Rex, when Scott goes all the way there, was there just an immediate jolt of energy on the sidelines? Because the stadium was absolutely upside down.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, he was always so much fun to watch. And you just never knew, you know, when he was going to pop one like that. And, again, in reflecting back and seeing video of that, there's a guy named Mike Jones, who was a younger linebacker that absolutely crushed. It might have been the punter, but you can see on highlights that he absolutely obliterated the guy to give Scott the last little bit of room he needed. So it's always fun to look back on those. I love watching those kind of things much more than anything I ever did.
Yeah, Rex, in that era, we were so good. Clemson was so good. And both teams had tremendous kickers. We go from Alan Leavitt to you to Kevin Butler, and we had terrific punters in there. Clemson, their punter, David Sims, was fantastic. And they had a great kicker as well that year in Obed Ariri. So for you, and obviously it's not a kicker versus kicker per se, do you feel like when you're going up against a guy who is in your stratosphere on that other side that you really have to be on top of your game?
Well, I sort of always looked at it two different ways. One was, yes, I absolutely, in the back of my mind, always wanted to be the best kicker on the field. But then the other thing, and this particularly was true of games like the Florida game, where they had a return man like Chris Collinsworth, that I really needed to be on top of my game to minimize, you know, the opposing team's impact in returns. So, absolutely, I had actually gotten to know Obed a little bit and actually had a picture taken with him prior to the game. A guy named Frank Fortune, who was a student photographer back in those days, and he's down at Georgia Southern now. I asked him prior to the season if he would take a few pictures like that of some guys that I had gotten to know. So I had a good one with Obed, and then one with Chris Collinsworth after the Buck to Lindsey triumph. So Chris looked like he was about to die, but he was so deflated. But it was great to capture that moment.
Thankfully, you were the one smiling big there as we pulled out those two special wins. Now, Rex, when you get, I guess, what you would call a surprising touchdown on a return or something like that, for you and the other specialists, do you have your helmet? Do you have to go scurrying out for the PAT?
Well, I typically had my helmet with me at all times, but I didn't. You know, back in those days, us old-timers, we had a kicking block that we used for placements. And so I didn't always have that. I typically would get it if the offense crossed over midfield. I would start preparing myself mentally and physically for a chance to kick. But with this situation, I didn't have that. So I was having to scurry to get it, but I always kept my helmet with me. So, and always, you know, in those kind of emotional situations, I needed to try to keep my emotions in check and focus on what I needed to do in the moment. And sometimes it was hard.
Scott, Clemson goes on the long march. We're up 7-0, and they're going 15, 16 plays. They're facing a third down, and then you come up with the interception. Of course, added to all this, and you guys mentioned how we recruited all the same players. Well, their starting quarterback, Homer Jordan, he played at Cedar Shoals right here at Athens. So he rolls left. You pick it in the end zone, and then it's off to the races. Take us through the 98-yard interception return back to their 2-yard line.
Let's go back very quickly. I wasn't in on the drive. Greg Bell, our defense consisted of probably 25, 30-some-odd players, and we subbed a lot, especially that time of year when it was so hot. And I'd been going into the games – switching off with Greg as other players in the secondary had been. That's what happened to A&M. They came out here and got into that heat and melted like a wax candle, but Clemson wasn't going to do that. We knew where they came from. So, but yeah, I'd been on the sideline, so I was pretty fresh, and I'd been watching some of their line play on their passing, as you always do, to try to get some reads. And the next thing I know, somebody says, get back in there, and in I go. I'm supposed to take the tight end on my side. The tight end blocks, so I'm free. I start sliding across the end zone, and I see Homer rolling the wrong way, and he never sees me coming from the other side of the field. It's one of those, if you play quarterback and you've thrown those passes to people who have picked them off, you understand, God, where'd he come from? But, yeah, it was just the perfect pass, and it hit me right in the hands, and away we go. Chris Welton's out in the flat, and he rolls and throws a nice little roll block, you know, one of those patented, and it didn't really just got in the guy's way, but and around the sidelines I go. After the punt return and the hot day and everything, I get to about the 50, and I could see all these Clemson guys on my right, and I could see Danny Ford, the hat and everything, and it's just, you know, it's a blur, and I'm thinking one of these guys is going to come off the sidelines and just KO me, but I could hear people, you know, but I'm running down the sidelines, and it just kept getting tighter and tighter and tighter, And I finally make it to the one or the two, and I could feel the heat coming on me, and I break the tackle and fall down and end up on the two. Yeah, go figure. That's one of those you don't want to be known for, but it was a fun time.
But we punched it in two plays later. At that point, they had run 30 plays. We had run five, but we were leading the game 14-0. Rex, would you agree when we talk about number 19, Mr. Werner here, and I think any Georgia football fan that watched you guys play, and I know your teammates had always said this, that Scott was one of the best instinctual players that they had ever seen?
Well, obviously not being in the DB room and watching film and watching all those kind of things, I never knew all those distinctions. I always looked at Scott as just being a phenomenal natural athlete. And I think that kind of fits in with what you're saying, that a lot of what he did came naturally and not so much from the technical side or being taught certain techniques and aspects of the game. He just had a knack for the ball and, you know, obviously great speed.
And Rex, in the second quarter, and I think it was inevitable at this point, again, just when you're looking at the total number of plays, Clemson draws within 14-10. I'm going to read you some statistic here at halftime. Clemson had outgained the Dogs by nearly 200 yards at the half. We had run 11 plays. They had run 57. They had 15 first downs. We had zero. Now, we had the big plays with Scott, so we just weren't on the field a whole lot. We're getting the ball to start the third quarter. Was the feeling there, and you capped that drive off, we'll talk about that in a second, with a field goal to put us up 17-10. Was it talked about at the half? Was the feeling like, guys, we've got to put something together here just to get our offense going and to give our defense a break?
I'm sure they were. You know, the guys always broke up in offensive and defensive groups to discuss, you know, whatever had transpired in the first half. And I was typically off by myself. I might overhear something occasionally from one group or another, particularly if I don't know if Coach Hafner was giving it to the offense or not. He probably was. Again, I typically would be apart and would be back just in time for the for Coach Dooley's second half speech before we went out. But, you know, I think just what typified that team, and again, at that point, we're still a work in progress, is that just the fact that week to week, somebody had to step up, and it just so happened that particular week, it was the defense and Scott, and then I had a couple of, you know, short field goals. So it just sort of, it's just the way it was that year, that week to week, somebody showed out, and occasionally we had a complete game, and like the Texas A&M game was probably a complete game. But we didn't have a ton of those. We had a few, but always somebody stepped up to help us win.
Two of the great Bulldogs of all time, All-American legends, Scott Werner and Rex Robinson, as we continue on 40 for 80, the sweetest season, right here on the Georgia Bulldogs Sports Network.
From the farmer's field that produces your food to the football field where your home team plays, Georgia Farm Bureau is committed to helping Georgia communities thrive. Georgia Farm Bureau provides peace of mind to families through home, auto, and life insurance with affordable coverage and fast claim services. By insuring with Georgia Farm Bureau, you're making an investment in Georgia agriculture, Georgia farmers, and Georgia families. With more than 150 offices in the state, Georgia Farm Bureau is always the home team.
Welcome back to 40 for 80, the sweetest season. Bulldog All-American legend Scott Werner and Rex Robinson, our guests today. I'm your host, Jeff Dantzler. Well, Scott, you heard all those stats. You guys, your tongues had to be hanging out. You were on the field so much defensively in that first half. What was the defensive mood in the locker room at halftime?
I don't remember, but I will say this. The one thing I do remember, and this is every game, including the national championship, that our defense wasn't – it didn't consist of 11 players. it consisted of everybody in every group, defensive line, linebackers, and secondary. Because during the game, I saw people in the national championship that I hadn't seen half a year in some of the times. And it was like that all year. Like, what are you doing in here? Where, you know, but that, yeah, it was being able to do that and having the depth we had, that we could put another guy and we didn't fall off very much from one defensive end or a tackle or a linebacker that could come in and not just play, but make plays. And that's the kind of defense we had. It always intrigues me when I look at good teams and as soon as their 11 players walk off the field, they're suffering because they don't have the good, strong depth. And I think that was probably above all one of the biggest I don't want to say it was a secret. It wasn't a big secret. We had good players two and three deep at every position.
Certainly did. And I think this game, just because the number of plays, and at the end of the game, Clemson had run over 90. We had run 48. But when you just look at the stat sheet, I mean, all the guys that had big games, Joe Crimmins, Eddie Meek, Cleaver Weaver, Jimmy Payne, Pat McShay, Robert Miles on that defensive line, Nate Taylor had 10 tackles, Tommy Thurston, and your old captain, Frank Ross, he said he thought that might have been the best or one of the best games he played. He wound up with 20 tackles that day. So that just goes back to what you're talking about, that complete effort. And then everybody in the secondary made big plays in the game as well.
Yeah. Biggest thing is they didn't miss tackles. They may not have been the guys that came in and knocked people out, but they broke fingernails and hung on to keep them out of the end zone. And you know, that's the bottom line to win a football game.
So, Rex, we take the opening kick, put together a really nice drive, ate up some clock, got some first downs. Herschel had three really good runs on that drive. We come up just short and getting in the end zone. Your number's called. You have the chance to put us up 17-10. Take us through the kick that gave us the seven-point lead.
You know, you're talking to a couple of really old guys at this point, and I don't remember anything, you know, specific prior to the kick. Like I mentioned a little while ago, you know, typically when we cross midfield, I would begin the process of just being ready in case they needed me to kick. You know, and again, you know, with a tight game like that, you know, every point is crucial. And so, you know, you, as a kicker, and I don't know if Kevin would concur, but, you know, you really just can't focus on a lot of the extraneous stuff. You really just need to focus on the task at hand. And just not get too emotionally high when a really good thing happens, or if something negative happens. Like I remember many times in those 4 years, you know, us making a drive and then maybe taking a sack on third down and putting us in a little bit longer field goal situation. You just can't really think about all those types of details as a kicker. You just need to think, okay, you know, this is where we are. This is what I need to do personally and just focus on that. And so, you know, just with the way the game had gone, every point was crucial and just needed to focus on what I needed to do.
Rex, do you feel like this team just personified what really is a beautiful thing for a football team when the offense feeds off the special teams, which feeds off the defense, which feeds off the special teams, that all three phases just seem to feed off of each other game after game throughout the season?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know that I knew this in our years prior at Georgia, but I have seen it as a coach on the high school level where it's possible for one side of the ball or the other to become a little bit resentful of them not keeping up their end of the bargain, so to speak. And whether it's the team or the players themselves or the coaches, I've seen that in other situations. I don't know about that at Georgia, but that potential is always there, even if it's very small or very low key. That looking sideways at somebody on the other side of the ball, or you know, if you're the kicker, you get looked at sideways a lot if you miss. And so to have a team and a group that just did not happen was rare and a beautiful thing.
Amen to that. Another thing I think about this team that really stands out, and we always had such a tough schedule, playing six SEC games, Clemson, South Carolina, and Tech. And then this year we also played Texas A&M and Texas Christian. So there were no cupcakes on there, that's for sure. Scott, you had talked about this earlier, between the familiarity, recruiting the same guys, and just battling each other every year. Didn't you find that the Clemson game was amongst the most physical, if not the most physical, year after year?
Oh, no doubt. It was the game. I mean, it made recruiting in the state of Georgia extremely important. Extremely important. And it still is. I mean, we're all after the same athletes, more or less. I know we go nationwide much more than they used to. But at that time, you knew a lot of those guys. You knew who they were. You knew where they came from. And you knew what kind of ball player they were. We didn't have this crazy everybody knowing everybody that's playing football in the United States. Yeah, it was a simpler time. Let's put it that way. And we had probably the most unique group of individuals ever assimilated at the University of Georgia. And I will say this: I'm sorry the guys don't all get to live together in Meckwerter Hall as well, where you develop those relationships, and you eat together, you sleep together, everything you do, and you watch out on everybody. Everybody takes care of everybody, and you make sure you're doing the right thing. That was the other thing, you didn't want to be the one to let the team down. You didn't want to be the one to make mistakes. You didn't be the one that went out carousing at night and running the streets and not doing your homework and all that kind of stuff. You did not be the one to want to be the one that said, well, guys, it's my fault. That was the very unique thing about 1980. So once things started rolling along and we kept winning, you saw it snowball and guys get more serious and start taking care of everybody, not just themselves.
Rex, I certainly feel like at that point, at least, it was the greatest senior class that George had ever had and the greatest freshman class that George had ever had. And there were a lot of other really good pieces in between. Was the backbone of this team, though, of what Scott was just talking about, the togetherness and the toughness of this senior class? Because you guys had been through a lot of highs and lows together.
That's exactly the way I look at that, is that, you know, we were freshmen in 1977. It was Coach Dooley's only losing season. And there were just a few of us that actually played as freshmen. But to be a freshman in 1977 and go 5-6, and then, you know, you're right. I mean, 78 was good. 79 was very average. Not as good as it should have been. But we definitely rode a roller coaster. But, you know, to be that group that went from worst to first was very special. And I do think that those guys Frank and so many guys on the offensive line that were seniors, you know, those were crucial, crucial guys and the positions that they were in to be the glue that held us together.
All right, so Rex, you make a second field goal to put us up 20-10. Clemson just puts together a couple of more long marches, but that defense, in typical Coach Russell fashion, we hold them and hold them and hold them, and they turn to a Reary for two field goals to make it 20-16. At this point, Clemson gets the ball back, and they're trying to mount a drive to take the lead in this thing. So here we are trying to hang on at 20-16. What's your view on the game at that point? There's probably a part of you that's thinking, am I going to have to make a big kick here to try and save us?
Well, typically in that kind of scenario, I go from kicker to cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, probably lost my voice yelling at the defense, you know. So just encouraging them. I don't remember any particular thought of having to be the difference at the end or anything like that. Just basically believing that our defense could hold them one more time, and very loudly encouraging them to do so.
We'll talk about that stand as the Dogs are leading 20-16, but those Tigers are on the march. This is 40-80, the sweetest season on the Georgia Bulldogs Sports Network.
From the farmer's field that produces your food to the football field where your home team plays, Georgia Farm Bureau is committed to helping Georgia communities thrive. Georgia Farm Bureau provides peace of mind to families through home, auto, and life insurance with affordable coverage and fast claim services. By insuring with Georgia Farm Bureau, you're making an investment in Georgia agriculture, Georgia farmers, and Georgia families. With more than 150 offices in the state, Georgia Farm Bureau is always the home team.
Welcome back. 40-80, the sweetest season. Two of the great Bulldogs of all time, All-American legends Scott Werner and Rex Robinson with us. Scott, Clemson gets down right on our doorstep on the 10-yard line. There was a controversial pass interference call that you were flagged for, but it sure looked to all of us Bulldog fans like their receiver ran into you. Do you have any memories of that?
Not the slightest. I couldn't tell you Obviously, again, I would do anything to win a football game except cheat. That being said, if that's the way the ref called it, that's the way it is. I should have gotten the film out or the CD and broke it down and watched the game to remember exactly what transpired. But it's like every game. I mean, pick any game of this 80 season, and somebody's going to step up and make a play. And that's essentially what happens when you have winning seasons like this. Somebody's going to make a play. And I'm sure they did on the goal line.
Well, and certainly so. Frank Ross from Greenville tipped it, and Jeff Hipp from Columbia came up with the interception there on the 1 yard line. And then after Herschel broke off a nice long run, we could breathe easy and we escaped with the win. But that was a prime example of what you two guys are talking about, what Frank and Jeff did to make the big play there and deny Clemson that one final time.
That's exactly right. And go through the whole list of the season. Well, you know, the one thing you don't mentioned, you know, we did all our scholarship players and our walk-ons. We had more walk-ons playing on that team than I think they've ever had on any of the teams that since then that actually played and made a big difference. Frank Ross wasn't even a citizen. He was still working with the Green Corps. We used to give him and he's turned out to be the greatest captain in the history of Georgia football because as you well know, it's still about us.
And Frank, obviously born in Barcelona, but growing up in Greenville, South Carolina. You guys are so tight, and I love it when you poke fun at each other too. Rex, we're sitting there. We get the ball. We're 3rd and 4 on the 7. Herschel goes for 20, and then Buck could just take a knee. After winning a game like that, is it a combination of relief and joy?
Oh, absolutely. And go just briefly going back to Frank, you know, Frank was my roommate for 2 years. So I had to put up with the phone calls with his family and not really knowing what he's saying on the phone. He could have been talking about me for all I know. anyway, you know, those kind of games, you know, the buildup and then the emotional release of the satisfaction of winning was always there. And, you know, in this game, it was more than usual because of the circumstances of the game. So more of relief probably than celebration.
Scott, number 10, Chris Welton, wanted to pass along a story to see if you remembered. He said he always liked to use the blow dryer in the dorm, and he had put some Johnson's baby powder in there, and it went poof and blew up all over you there, and you got so mad that you threatened to move out.
Jeff, as you can see, my hair was quite important. Back then I had long, beautiful brown hair, and yes, he did do the baby powder in the blow dryer one morning about 7:30. Had it been done at another time, I probably wouldn't have snapped, but yeah, it was one of those things. I wrote about it in one of my stories. talking about, you know, it was a childish prank, and but he thought it was funny. But yeah, I did move out. I moved to the back of the dorm with the golfers and the baseball players, and doggone it, I had the police looking for me quicker than living up front with all the football players running on the golf course fishing. But yeah, it was that was a good time. The memories, oh my gosh, long time.
Well, guys, and Rex, I'll go with you real quick. We'll start to wrap things up here. At this point now, again, we've won two all-time thrillers. I mean, Tennessee and Clemson, one play goes the other way. Either one of those games could have gone the other way. We got what turned out to be a very nicely timed blowout over Texas A&M. Is that feeling of destiny, that feeling of magic, maybe starting to build a little bit more after the Clemson game?
Well, I tell you, I did feel good about the team after the Texas A&M game because, you know, they were actually favored over us, and we just beat the stew out of them. And to win against Clemson, obviously, but I still just – I don't know that we still felt like a team of destiny. I remember a pep rally that we attended and were a part of for the Vanderbilt game was the first time I ever said anything. Of course, we had moved up in the rankings pretty significantly by then. But at that, it was that point when I personally kind of felt like we might be a team of destiny. So again, I always try to keep things on, you know, low key and not get ahead of ourselves, so to speak, or assume, you know, it's just that whole one day at a time, one game at a time kind of mentality. And we really seemed to grasp that year.
Scott, would you agree with that? It was keeping that short-term goal, that next week, that next practice in mind to keep that long-term goal, that ultimate dream alive.
Well, I think it goes back to 1977, 78, and 79. We'd experienced the lows, the highs, and the what would I call 79? The doubt, the questions. What happened in 79 and 1980, we knew everything. We had everything lined up. We had all the players. We just had to make the plays and keep the game going. And I think when you struggle, and we did struggle in some of those first games, it really helped. We really understood that we could overcome some of the obstacles no matter how far we got behind. And as it was, it turned out to be a true statement that you know, if we just keep playing hard, somebody's gonna make a play. Somebody's gonna get an interception. Who knows?
Well, it remains the greatest team George has ever had. And Rex and Scott, I know you guys are huge fans of Kirby and what he's doing, trying to get Georgia. And he's done such a phenomenal job of trying to bring another national championship back to Georgia. In fact, we just found out for the Arkansas game, we're going to be wearing those throwback jerseys and hopefully the red pants too, that you guys wore up in Knoxville for the season opener. I think that's pretty cool.
Wow.
That is very cool.
I never really thought about jerseys having that big an impact on the game itself. You know, it's just clothes you wore, but for the fans and for some of us, you know, sitting back watching the game, it will certainly be interesting.
Well, and I think it does pay great homage to everything that you guys accomplished. And I want to thank you both for being here. We're doing this all season, and I hope you guys will come back and join us again for a later broadcast. This has been a lot of fun going down memory lane. Scott, Rex, talking about that great win over Clemson.
Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Anytime.
All right. That's to the all-time great University of Georgia football legends, All-American record setters, the one and only Rex Robinson, the one and only Scott Werner, two of the heroes of the day as Georgia defeats the Clemson Tigers 20-16. And we want to thank everybody for listening to us here again today. I'm your host, Jeff Dantzler. I'd like to thank all of our producers and engineers, Alan Thomas, Mike Bilbo, Cabell Philpott, Drew Brackett, and Rick Starrett. Next week, we revisit Georgia's 34-3 victory over Texas Christian in Athens. But for now, the chapel bell is ringing loud as the Bulldogs have beaten Clemson. In a classic clash, Georgia tops the Tigers 20-16. Thanks so much for listening to 40 for 80, the sweetest season, right here on the Georgia Bulldog Sports Network.
The 40 for 80 podcast is presented by Georgia Farm Bureau, always the home team. Join us next time to hear more about Georgia's magical run to the 1980 National Championship.